Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. It's Mr. Anchor. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on. Peace.
Hello, hello, hello. And welcome once again on Thursday at 8 p.m. on Eastern Standard Time. This is the FSP Crew Show. I am your host, JT. I'm a little under the weather, but I'm here with my two co-hosts, Black the Bookie and Jeff the Joker, as usual, spending time together on this Thursday night in conversation and give you information about the world of fantasy sports and politics. We've got a great show in store for you tonight, a little college basketball, some news in the NFL, some NBA news, streaks and all of the like. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you want to talk to Black, Jeff, or me. We also have a chat room. Chat room's open for your convenience. You'd like to ask a question, comment, or make a statement in the chat room, you can also do that. But without further ado, I've talked long enough. I'm going to bring in my two co-hosts and start this show off, starting off with hello, Jeff, and then hello, Black.
Hello, Jerry, Black, and all listeners. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? It's Christmas right now in March. I informed my boss early that there will be 0% work done today. The hardest work I've done today is go on break.
Oh, boy. Is that right? Okay. Well, that must mean, since we're going to talk about, I think probably one of your favorite subjects, which just happens to be March Madness, which is really taking place today. The play-in games of the last 64 teams were yesterday, and now we get down to real business starting today. We've had, I think, a minor upset for one over in the Midwest region. Oklahoma State, I think, got upset by Oregon. Oklahoma State being the number 5 seed and Oregon being the number 12 seed. That just took one of my teams out of that bracket. Since I went over to the Midwest and started that way, Black, talk to me.
They were seeded too high to begin with. Oklahoma State, they weren't that impressive this year. I feel they were seeded way too high.
Okay. Jeff, you got any comment on that upset or anything that's going on right now or
I'll tell you, I haven't been watching the college hoops that much this year. I think maybe it's because I was despondent over what was going on with the Big East. But I'll tell you, if it wasn't for this tournament, college basketball would be like the D-League. You know what I'm saying? I can't even imagine what college basketball would be like without the tournament. And it's funny, you know, these early round games, the game that really caught my attention was in, don't laugh, the NIT.
Okay.
Kentucky got bounced. They didn't even win one game.
Yep.
I mean, usually you don't even notice the NIT. I mean, it's such a farce. But the thing is with Kentucky, I mean, everybody knows they lost their top 6 players from their national championship team. And, you know, they did have a good recruiting class, and that's, you know, the way you do it. And, you know, Calipari, he knows what he's doing. He can recruit as well as anyone. But it didn't happen with this group. You know, it's hard when, you know, you're trying to build a team around 18-, 19-year-old kids. But I think all of them are coming back, and they got another top-notch recruiting class. And some of these guys are a little disappointing this year, so nobody's starting job is safe.
Okay. Well, let's go this route. Now, St. Louis and New Mexico played. St. Louis, which was a 4 seed. I'm going to start in the Midwest. I'm going to go to the West, and I'm going to these other brackets, too, because I want to get Black's opinion on some of this stuff that's already taken place and that it's going to take place either today or tomorrow. And we'll start in the Midwest because that's where I started with upset with Oregon beating Oklahoma State. And right now the number one seed, Louisville, is look like they probably will have this well in hand against A&T, I should say. But St. Louis handed New Mexico, which is a 4-13 seed, a 20-point loss. Memphis, which is a 6 seed, and I started to change this in my bracket when I filled out my bracket. I started to think St. Mary was going to upset Memphis, and they almost did. I think it took a last-second shot. They won the game by a 2-point margin, Memphis being a 6, 11, St. Mary being 11th, and Memphis moves on. Number 3, Michigan State beat Valparaiso, and Michigan State being the number 3 seed. Let me see who else is. Gonzaga had a tough fight, believe it or not, against number 16, Southern. Only beats them by 6 points. Number 8, 9, now this is one of these Big East teams. I figured they were going to probably get past Wichita State, but 8, 9 seeds are pretty evenly matched. So you're really tossing your coin in the air and picking one of these. I happen to pick wrong in one bracket, and I'd happen to pick right in another one I picked out. Now this is over in the West, I'm only talking about games that are going to be played today. Arizona's playing number 11, number 6 Arizona in the seed is playing number 11 Belmont. Number 3 New Mexico is going to play later Harvard, and this is over in the West. So far, Black, any of those you see are possible in the Midwest and the West, not getting to the South and East for today. You see anything that may happen strange for today?
I keep an eye on. I don't know if you mentioned this game, but the Montana and Syracuse game.
That's over in the South.
That's over in the South region, yeah. Allegations against Syracuse came out.
I'm sorry, that's over in the East.
That's over in the East? Yeah.
Yes.
Syracuse had some allegations against them, some type of cheating during the 5 mellow years, so I will keep an eye on that game tonight.
Okay. What about any of the ones I mentioned in the West and Midwest? Games that are still to be played, like Colorado State against Missouri.
That's another game you might want to keep your eye on, Colorado State or Missouri. I think I have Missouri in my bracket, but I wouldn't be surprised if Colorado State pulled that one out.
What about New Mexico against Harvard or Arizona against Belmont?
Those games should go according to plan.
Okay. Now let's move over to the South. I'm only talking about games that are getting played today. VCU against number 5 VCU. This is over in the South region. Number 5 VCU against number 12 Akron. Michigan is in play right now. Is up by 4 against number 13 South Dakota. I'm trying to see who else is. UNLV, number 5 in the East region. Is up, in fact, it's tied. It's just tied against the number 12, California. Syracuse, like you mentioned, it's going up against, which is the 4 seed in the East, is up against the number 13, Montana, at 10-15. And I started to pick Bucknell, and I changed my pick, and I stood with Butler. Number 6, Butler, won handily over number 11 Bucknell. It's moved on, and they're going to face number 3 in this seed in the East, Marquette, who barely got by. And they're the number 3 seed, Marquette, barely got by. number 14,
what made
Davis.
You want to pick Buckner?
What?
What made you want to pick Buckner?
I just had a feeling that Butler was ripe for the upset, and to me, there's really not that much of a difference between the number 6 seed and the number 11 seed, to tell you the truth. And I just had a feeling they're playing in the East. I figured Bucknell would probably have a better chance of winning against Butler, but I didn't change my mind. I said, you know what, it's the number 6 seed. The number 6 seed for a reason, so I took a shot. I mean, let me put it this way. In one bracket I filled out, in one bracket sheet I filled out, I picked Butler. In the other one, I picked Bucknell.
I just didn't even go by percentages or anything this year. There were so many brackets I entered, some that I couldn't even get to at the last second. I just went down and just picked teams. I'm sitting at about 85% right now going into tonight's action.
Well, the thing that really surprised me, and you're going to get some teams that are going to rise up and give these higher-seeded teams some competition. But a number 14 against a number 3 Marquette, and Marquette just pulled that out by a point against number 14 Davidson. I would have never thought that. I thought Marquette – I picked Marquette quite naturally, but – I'm surprised that the score is what it is. I'm really surprised about that. I mean, it really...
You shouldn't be surprised. There are hardly any superstars left on campus. A lot of these teams, they're playing light teams, so you're gonna see close games coming down the stretch in a lot of these games.
Okay. Well, I went through the bracket, the beginning games of yesterday. I want to go through to tomorrow, and I'm starting over. Since I ended in the East, I'm going to start in the East. Number 2 Miami against number 15 Pacific. What are your thoughts on that one?
That should be blowout city, but it is a tournament, so we'll see what happens.
Okay. In the same, whoever wins against those two teams is going to play number 7 Illinois against the winner, number 10 Colorado. This is all tomorrow what I'm talking about. Who you like there?
Yeah, I like Illinois in this one.
Okay. Then we'll move up in the same bracket. Number 8 NC State against number 9 Temple. Now, like I said, these 8-9 games, you just toss a coin and just pick one because these teams are supposedly so closely matched. Who do you like there?
Well, I this one was a hard one to pick for him because I got a young guy that I know that plays with Temple. So I said, why not just roll the dice and I just go with Temple in this one.
Okay.
Yeah,
and
watch
quite
out
naturally.
Watch out for number 3 in that game, Anthony Lee, homeboy from Maryland.
And he plays for Temple or he plays for NC State?
He plays for Temple.
Okay.
I got friend Dunphy trying to pull a first-round upset there.
All right. And then we have the number 1 seed playing tomorrow in mid-afternoon against number 16, James Madison. Indiana plays James Madison. You don't see any kind of 1-16 upset there, do you?
JMU is good, but I don't see them doing it against Indiana. I'd be surprised, but it should be a good game.
All right. Well, let me move over to the South region, which should be pretty interesting here. There's a few teams that I like that unfortunately they're going to be matched up against each other, knocking each other off to be able to get to the Elite Eight, or the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Final Four, and quite naturally to the championship. One of your favorite teams, number 2 Georgetown, goes up against 15 Florida Gulf. I know who you like here. I shouldn't even ask you, but I'm going to ask you anyway.
Well, you know who I like here, but I'm very concerned. This Florida Gulf Coast team being a Miami team that was ranked in the top 10 this year, it's a good matchup on paper. Even though it doesn't look like it, it's a good matchup on paper. I'm kind of concerned here. Our second leading scorer has been out due to grades. If he was there, I would say blowout city, but this is going to be a tough game. It's not going to be a cakewalk.
All right, and then we have whoever wins that Georgetown matchup goes up against number 7 San Diego State and number 10 Oklahoma winner. Talk to me.
I picked San Diego State because of Marshall Faulk.
Okay. Marshall Faulk don't play any basketball, but okay. Okay. And we're going to talk about something that Marshall Faulk is pretty upset about, too, so later on in the program here, after we finish with this bracketology.
A lot of running backs are upset. I heard from Clinton Ford today as well.
Yes. Now, there's another team I like in here, and Billy Donovan coaches it. Number 3, Florida, going against against number 4, Northwestern State. I'm pretty sure you're thinking Florida is going to be an easy win here or what?
No, I wouldn't say easy, but it should be a win here for Florida.
Okay. And whoever wins between those two is going to go up against the winner of number 6 UCLA up against the number 11 seed Minnesota. Who you like?
That's a tough game. I think I like Minnesota and upset this.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure. I think one of the UCLA guys went down like close to the end of the season. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this bracket has a lot of good teams in it. A lot of highly rated teams: Georgetown, Florida, Michigan, who I'm talking about now against number 13 South Dakota. And they're leading
at
halftime.
They're in a tough game right now, Michigan. They're in a tough battle right now.
Yes. And the number 1 seed is Kansas. They go up against number 16, Western Kentucky. I'm pretty sure you're thinking Kansas is going to win that one pretty handily. Is that what you're thinking?
Kansas will make the Sweet 16 Elite 8 run, and they'll bounce.
And then this other bracket, whoever wins against the Kansas Western Kentucky, the number 8 North Carolina and number 9 Villanova is going to have to face Kansas. Who you like between those two?
I'll take Kansas there.
Between North Carolina and Villanova.
Oh, North Carolina, yeah. Give me North Carolina there.
Wow. So,
I'm not too big on Villanova. North Carolina, they're okay, but I'll take them in the first round. I'll take them in the first round game. Give me North Carolina.
You know, I'm looking at these brackets, and tell me if I'm wrong or not, but it looks like the toughest bracket to get through looks like the South, with Kansas, North Carolina, Michigan, Florida, and Georgetown, compared to where Indiana has to go through. They got Indiana, they got Syracuse, Marquette, and Miami. In the West, the number 1 seed Gonzaga goes up against possibly, who's the number 2 seed, which Ohio State, against New Mexico, and maybe Kansas State. And Louisville, who's the number 1 seed in the Midwest, has Michigan State, Duke, and St. Louis. Now, I've named the top 4 teams, basically the top 4 teams in each one of these brackets. And it looks to me, and maybe I'm mistaken, that the toughest bracket to get through is the South bracket. I don't know if you looked at it completely, Black, but or Jeff. Give me your opinion on what you think of how tough each one of these brackets are.
I'm looking at the brackets now. You know what cracks me up? I wish they would do something about it. That to try to put schools somewhere in the region where they should be.
Right.
You know, I mean, I know it's hard to do because, you know, sometimes there's a lot of good schools from one region, but Minnesota shouldn't be in the South. You know what I mean?
Right.
And my reason is I remember the year or one of the years that Seton Hall went to the Final Four. They were playing in the West region. They were playing games in Seattle. And that's really hard for fans to get to on short notice. You know, I mean, believe me, this tournament is one of the few things the NCAA does right. But if they want to make it better, try to take the geography a little more into consideration, you know. And, and this year, you know, looks interesting because there's so much parity. I mean, most years there's usually a handful of teams who have a good shot. This year there's more than a dozen teams who have a good shot. I know they cooled off late in the season, but of course they're number one seed. They won't take anybody by surprise. Indiana has looked good at times. And a team that I think is interesting is Miami. And,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. It'd be kind of nice if they won because they're really not known as a basketball school. It'd be interesting because, you know, the pro team is doing pretty well down there. And I don't know. I think one of the things they have in their favor is they have good players who stay there for 3 or 4 years, not stars who leave after one. So they did something right down there.
Black.
South looks good, though.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think that South is kind of tough. I think Louisville, what bracket is Louisville in?
Midwest.
That seems to be the easiest region out of the group.
Yes, I really believe that. I mean, I'm looking at this, and I really can't see a tough game. Maybe Michigan, if they beat Michigan State, or maybe if Michigan State doesn't get there. But Louisville seems like they do have a very, very easy time getting to the Elite Eight. Sweet 16, they shouldn't have any problem getting to. The Elite Eight should be a pretty good possibility because of the bracket that they started in and who they have to face if they keep on winning. I think
out of that whole set, I think I had Louisville meeting Wisconsin.
For what?
For the Final Four in that out of that side of the bracket.
Really? Really? I'm very surprised at that one. Tell me why Wisconsin. I have to hear it. Tell me why Wisconsin. I know Wisconsin beat Michigan. I think they beat them twice this past year, if I'm not mistaken. But tell me why Wisconsin.
I like the brand of ball Wisconsin plays, man. They play tough, hard-nosed basketball. I think they'll make a surprise and run and represent that Big Ten. The Big Ten, they show well during the regular season, and then they kind of fade in these tournaments. But I think they got something going on in Wisconsin. They're going to make a run this year.
Okay. Now, Wisconsin has to go through, if they win tomorrow and Kansas State wins, they have to beat Kansas State in order to get past Kansas State. And if they win against Kansas State, there's a strong possibility that they go up against Gonzaga. And Gonzaga is...
I'm not impressed with Gonzaga.
Okay. Okay, I'm just saying. I mean, you know, they have their possibility of making it if they win tomorrow. The next person, the next team they'll meet, if Kansas State wins, will be number four, Kansas State. And then if they beat Kansas State, there's a strong possibility that they go up against number one Gonzaga. So they're going to have a tough road to get to that Final Four.
Yeah, it'll be tough, but Gonzaga was a fraudulent number one this year. They do to all the teams losing, and they moved up. I was never sold on Gonzaga this year.
What don't you like about Gonzaga?
I'm not sure. I don't know if it's something in the name, where they play, the conference, but I've never been sold on Gonzaga. But maybe it's the Adam Morrison years that still get it.
Okay.
Black has a point on Gonzaga. You know, these ratings, the rankings this year have been very inaccurate. Usually the number one team in the country is whoever hasn't lost recently. And teams from Gonzaga's conference do not do well in the tournament.
Exactly.
They really don't. And, they're going to have that rap until they start winning some games.
Okay. Well, going through the games that are taking place today and that are going to take place tomorrow, all right, I don't know who wants to go first, but what I'm looking for you guys to give me your final four, your final two, and of those final two, who wins it all? Jeff first.
Oh, dang, that's tough. All right, Kansas in the South, Miami in the East, in the West, that's tough. I think Black's right about Wisconsin. I think they were number one earlier this year. And in the Midwest, Hey, I thought Oklahoma State was pretty good.
So did I.
Can't pick them. Hold on a second. I don't know, maybe Duke in the Midwest. And to win it all, that's tough. You know what? I like them, and they got the experience. I'll go with Miami.
Miami's going to play who?
Now, all this is recording, so I'm going to sound like a dope, and there'll be proof if this doesn't play out. So.
Hey, Jeff, all three of us may sound like dope, so don't feel bad.
Yeah.
Okay? So you say who's going to face who in the final game and who wins?
Okay. So I got to look at the other bracket now. I guess
Kansas and Miami.
Miami, Wisconsin will be in the final game.
Miami and Wisconsin. And you have who winning?
Miami.
Okay. Black, talk to me. Final four.
All right, I don't have a bracket in front of me, so bear with me. You guys can call out the region, but we'll take Louisville, whatever region that is.
That's the Midwest.
I'll take Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, that's the West.
Got the West, so that'll be a finals matchup on the east side, I guess, of the bracket. And on the other side, I'm going to jump out there, and I'm going to take my Hoyas.
You going to take Georgetown? Oh, boy, what a homer. Okay.
I'm going to take my Hoyas and upset Kansas.
Okay, in the east.
In the east, and I'm going to take Miami and whatever region that is. Georgetown, Miami, Louisville, Wisconsin, Final Four. I have Louisville moving on.
Right.
And I have Miami, unfortunately, beating Georgetown. And it'll be Louisville-Miami final with Louisville bringing home the championship.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's recorded for a historical reference. I have number one Louisville going up against number one Gonzaga. And I have number two, one Kansas going up against number two Miami. And the winners of those would be... number one Gonzaga going up against number two Miami in the winter. Just like you've picked, not just like you picked. I think Jeff picked them. Number two Miami winning it all. Isn't it Miami the ones with the senior guard play?
Yeah, they are. But I think you got too many ones in your equation right there.
Well, let me put it this way. What I'm saying, I know I have too many ones. I have three ones and one two. But I don't see how possibly, unless somebody gets seriously hurt in the Midwest bracket, that Louisville loses that. And I can't see Louisville losing that. I understand what you're talking about with Gonzaga being a weak number one, and if a couple teams, including Wisconsin, that can knock them off. But... I'm going, and I'm rolling the dice with Gonzaga. Maybe this will be their year to get to the Final Four, and maybe to the championship game. I really like Miami. Miami's the number two seed. I think they're going to get past Indiana. I think it's going to be Indiana and Miami in the Elite Eight, and I think they'll be able to get past Indiana to get to the Final Four because of that senior guard play. That's key in these type of tournaments. And number one, Kansas, like I said, that South bracket is a real tough bracket, in my opinion, with Georgetown, Florida, Kansas, and even North Carolina. And Miami, Kansas is going to get tested if they have to face North Carolina, and even needs to face Villanova. You never know. Villanova is no slouch either. So, and They also have number four Michigan there. So anything can be, anything is possible in that region. But I have to go with number one Kansas. But I really like the overall championship to take is Miami. Just like Jeff said, I may be having both feet in my mouth after the several weeks when this is played. But you got to take a stand somewhere. You got to put it down on paper or put it on some audio somewhere. And if you want to be a prognosticator, and if I don't know what I'm talking about, it'll be proven very shortly.
Hey, I mean, it'll be a great story if Miami wins it. I mean, Jim Larranaga, local guy here, formerly of George Mason, about 3 or 4 years removed from coaching George Mason, and takes Miami to the championship. It'll be a great story with a great finish.
You know, I got to give some props to Louisville because I almost picked them to win that Midwest region. And in these type of games, I'll tell you, is there anybody else you'd rather have coaching a team than Rick Pitino?
Exactly. You're absolutely right.
That's huge. I mean, you know, still one of the best tacticians ever. And, you know, this is when that's, you know, they're playing for Pinks now, you know. And,
right.
And imagine, I mean, back if Louisville goes all the way, back-to-back, Kentucky and then their arch rival Louisville in back-to-back years, that's something else.
And to close out the Big East with a Big East champion.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
Be historic, yeah.
That's true. Continue. Speaking of Big East basketball, and Black alluded to it earlier in the show, Syracuse basketball under NCAA investigation for violations, both serious and wide-ranging. This case is not related to the other investigation they had of sexual abuse claims they had in November. They've been under investigation from the NCAA for a number of years and had been issued a letter of preliminary inquiry, in the last few days. And they're, like I said, serious and wide-ranging violations, and they're investigating both the basketball and football programs. And one of their, I think you alluded to before, Fab Melo was suspended from the basketball team before the 2012 tournament. Another guy, James Southern, was suspended for 6 games. There have been reports that both suspensions were related to academics. Black, if you've heard more or if you know more, talk to me.
I haven't heard more, but those kinds of rings are always up to no good. I wonder what Boeheim is going to do once this is done. I'm really interested in seeing the game tonight, too, but I haven't had any more information than what you've had. I just always knew that the tangerines were fraudulent.
Oh, boy. Here we go. That sounds like a typical Georgetown fan. talking about one of their bitter rivals, the Syracuse Orange Men, not the Tangerine Men. But that's okay, Black. I understand where you're coming from with that. But I wanted to get that out there, and it's just another here we go, and we'll have to wait and see. It's just not the basketball. And the thing about it, it's ironic because this is the last hurrah for the so-called Big East as we know it, because of them breaking away and having their own, adding their own teams away from Connecticut, and I forget who else is not going to be in there, but
Syracuse,
yes. So those big rivalries, unfortunately, are all memories in my in the years back when they used to have Syracuse, Connecticut, Georgetown, St. John's, Seton Hall. All kinds of rivalries and all kinds of big name games and all kinds of all stars from each one of those teams that found their way into the NBA and continue that rivalry in the different NBA teams that they were at. So it's a shame that the money it talks a lot, and it's talking in this case. And we'll just see how far it goes with the investigation and see if Mr. Boeheim is a go or no go in staying at the University of Syracuse. If they're bad enough, it may be Mr. Boeheim may have worn his welcome out, just like the and I forget his name. I can't believe I forgot his name. The coach of Connecticut. So
Calhoun.
Yeah, Jim Calhoun. Yes. So. Sooner or later, I guess these guys get caught up with, and then they have to move on. So, and some of them take new jobs, and some of them are fade off into the sunset. All right, let's move on to what else I wanted to talk about here.
Did you tell the Joker about your unfortunate creaming incident the other day?
No. Refresh my memory, Black. This is going to be a good one. Refresh my memory, Black.
Oh, when you found out that the one Frederick Douglass has joined your Houston Texans.
Oh, Frederick Douglass. Give me a break. Here we go. Oh, for those fans that don't know what we're talking about, the all-pro safety, the Super Bowl-winning safety, The safety is one of the best safeties in all of football and is headed to the Hall of Fame, is headed to Houston.
You forgot to add the 43-year-old safety.
Oh, he's not 43. Stop. 34. You got the numbers turned around. He's headed to Houston to shore up the backside of that defense and add some experience and some knowledge for the backside of that defense along with Wade Phillips. I think it's going to be a good combination of age and experience. He still has a few years left in him that he signed a two-year contract. And all I have to say is welcome to the Houston Texans, Ed Reed. Your comments. I know what Black's comments are. What about you there, Jeff?
Yeah, and I guess the more recent news is Urlacher looks like he's not going to finish his career with the Bears. It's a classic salary cap move. And,
Right now, Daniel Snyder is somewhere cramming his pants about that move.
I think, though, he's a good fit in a Tampa 2 type of team, you know, who run that type of system. But it is a classic salary cap move. And, they love their middle linebackers in Chicago. But it's a business, and these things happen, unfortunately.
Well, my question is this. Brian Urlacher, 13 years of loyal service to the Chicago Bears. I think supposedly, and I'm not saying for sure, but supposedly he wanted at least a two-year contract, $5.5 million. And supposedly, and I don't know if this is true or not, but supposedly the Chicago Bears text him an offer of $2 million, take it or leave it.
I heard that too. Yeah.
Now,
and
for a guy that's been loyal, been playing hurt, and blood, sweat, and tears for a team for 13 years. Not so much the $2 million offer, but it either text to you or email to you or whatever, and take it or leave it without any kind of wiggle room is pretty, in my opinion, and he felt this was a slap in the face and a little disrespectful. I feel the same way. Black may feel different. Jeff may feel different or agree with me. Give me your thoughts, Jeff and Black.
You know, it might be a slap in the face. Most of us get slapped in the face on a regular basis if you have a job, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, it stinks, and at least he's lucky. I mean, you know, for him it's big bucks, and he'll probably end up with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, like I said, he's played for Rod Marinelli. Is he in Minnesota now? Where is he coaching? It'll be somebody like that, you know. Lovey Smith, I think, is out of coaching this year. But you know, I'm pretty sure he'll end up with somebody. And you know, it's things. I mean, you know, him and Lance Briggs are close friends. Hey, I've lost friends at a job, and it is a downer, you know, because that's what makes work bearable sometimes.
Right.
But, you know, you keep showing up. If the checks don't bounce, you keep showing up. And if it bothers you that much, you know, you take your talents elsewhere, you know.
Black?
There's no loyalty in sports. I'm not surprised at this at all. I don't know why Urlacher would consider the slap in the face. It's just the economics of football nowadays.
Well, I mean, let me talk about this for a minute. Owners, and they said this in the past about players not being loyal to the organization, wanting too much money or holding out or doing things to try to ensure that they get a higher contract, and alluding to the fact that they're not being loyal if they hold out. This is, in my opinion, a classic case of the organization not being loyal to a player. I mean, you know, I understand that they want to give him the minimal amount, but to text somebody or email him a contract offer and it's to take it or leave it for a guy that's been in the organization and been the face of the organization for 13 years, you know, I would think that it would have been a better ending to the story versus, bringing him in, saying we can't give you any more. This is the bottom line. I understand that there's a new regime, new GM, and a new coach who doesn't owe anything. They don't owe anything to Brian Urlacher, but the organization, I would think, owed him something for all the blood, sweat, and tears and his bummed-up knees that he either got operated on or he played on in order to help his team win or not win, but help his team on the field. But as you say, there is no loyalty on either side, and it's all about the Benjamins. But this is cold. I think this is cold-hearted to just more or less just toss him out with the rest of the garbage. There's a lot
of
guys.
Some of the greats have been tossed. Look at Joe Montana. Look at Brett Favre. There's a number of great guys that have been tossed. There's no loyalty here. It's the business.
Well, that's true. Let's talk about this. He's a list of known defensive players. I'm going to name just a few of them. Elvis Dumervil, who got jacked up with his sacks and fired his agent because of what happened. John Abraham, Osiu Minora, Dwight Freeney. We talked about Brian Urlacher. And there's other guys out there, but those are pretty named guys that I'm talking about that haven't landed a spot. What do you think is going on here, Black?
Salary cap.
Okay.
And the guys that do have money don't want to waste it because the draft is coming up. These guys will be around probably around after the draft. I'm not thinking.
All right. I'm going to add a few other guys here. Richard Seymour, Charles Woodson, Asamoah, just to name a few other guys.
And those guys are kind of long in the tooth as well.
Okay. But I think they still got years left in them. What do you think, Jeff?
Some teams might be looking for bargains. You know, they might be you know playing the game, and that's part of the cap. And especially if a guy's been in the league a while and he's got an injury history, they might not get what they want. You know, I mean that guy John Abraham. I mean, I remember when he was playing for the Jets. I mean, that guy would miss a game if he lost an eyelash, you know?
Right.
I wouldn't want that cat on my team. as much as I like Osiu Minora, yeah, he's been in the league 10 years. He's had big injuries in recent years. But the thing is, somebody's going to make him an offer because that guy can get to the quarterback. And he could do something once he gets there, too. I mean, he could strip the ball, do something with it. I'd like to – it's not going to happen. I'd like to see him stay with the Giants. But that and I was thinking, you know, with this Urlacher thing, I'm so glad that LT and Phil Sims finished their careers as Giants. But if they would have gone somewhere for a year or two, they still would have been loved by Giant fans and remembered as a Giant because, you know, we're not stupid. A lot of the great Giant players, Harry Carson, he played his whole career in New York, George Martin, but, you know, not everybody has. And, you know, fans realize that. You know, it's just it's part of the business, you know.
Okay. Well. Oh, shut up. I don't want that. Get out of here with that. all right. This is what I wanted to talk about. You guys know this was coming. What I'm talking about is the NFL, in their infinite, so-called infinite wisdom, passes a rule. Well, let me put it this way. I'll hit the light one first, and then we'll go to the one that's going to probably have a little bit of controversy. Back in 2001, 2002, I guess it was, whatever it was, back then when Oakland played the New England Patriots, and that infamous tuck rule came into effect. It took 10 years for the NFL to finally come to its senses and abolish the tuck rule. Talk to me, guys. 10 years too late or what?
You know, were they waiting for Al Davis to pass away? It's not funny, you know. But I heard things. A little late.
Yeah, this is way late. It was a travesty when it happened in 2001. This is long overdue here. Long overdue.
Okay. I have a friend, and as soon as I heard this, I had to tell him. He happened to be a Oakland Raider fan. And to this day, one of the reasons where he can't stand New England is because of what happened at the tuck rule in New England. And to this day, he's a bitter person. Anytime the Oakland Raiders and that rule gets that play and that rule gets mentioned. And he really didn't want to hear. He said what you said. 10 years too late. They're going to take back the playoff game. They're going to give us a chance to go in the Super Bowl back then. It's a long time coming. I always laugh at Jet when about a conspiracy things, but this has got to be. I got to believe that there was a conspiracy or something going on when this rule came up, when that play was originally called a fumble, and then for some reason it was replayed, and the referee on the field got buzzed down and said, "We got to look at this," from the replay official on the field. I mean, up in the booth. So it is what it is.
All I have to say is, the Boston Mafia is real.
Hey, Black. Being an AFC East fan, and a particular team I don't want to name, I truly believe it because I've seen a lot of things happen with the team that they've played two times a year, and also seen a lot of things happen when they played certain teams, like the Baltimore Ravens, and they get jacked up, they get jobbed. So I gotta believe that there could be some validity to it, even though it's been denied over and over again, but it's been proven, in my opinion, on tape more than once. And I still say they haven't won a Super Bowl ever since Spygate. So that's all I got to say. They may have been in the Super Bowl, but they haven't won one since then. Anyway, to improve player safety, the NFL, in their infinite wisdom, has come up with a rule that the crown is called the crown of the helmet rule, and it was passed by a wide margin. It was passed 31-1, and the one dissenting vote was the owner of the Cincinnati Bengals.
My man.
Huh?
My man.
Yes. And it boggles my mind that they could come up with this rule without any medical statistics or anything behind it, just because they want to say they're trying to protect the players, and this is part of the safety issue with the players. And I don't have the quote. I'm trying to find the quote from Mike Brown that said it. And basically he was saying that there's no medical proof, there's no statistics that you come up with that to say that this should be implemented because of the fact is it's detrimental to a player's health. It's basically trying to cover their ass because of all the concussion and all the other lawsuits. So this is just another another check in their corner saying they're trying to protect the players. I understand this is supposed to be they're trying to, once they implement something like this, it gets pushed down or it gets implemented from the college, high school, Pop Warner level. So this is something that they're trying to change the culture of. But just like Marshall Faulk said, just like Jerome Bettis said, he's been taught when you are going to get hit, you lower your pad level. If you lower your shoulders, which is lowering your pad level, your neck is tied to your head. So what else is going to get lowered? Your helmet. So what I don't understand is how they can justify this and how they can say it's for the betterment. You can't run with your chin up. You can't run with your eyes up. You're going to get hurt. And I'm going to give you a quote from Mike Mayock. While I applaud the league with most of what's going on with the safety concerns, I look at this rule and say at some point we are crossing the line. To me, a running back has got to be able to drop his pad level. That's just what I said. When a running back drops his pad level, his helmet goes with him. I think it's part of the game. I don't think you can legislate all contact and forceful head hits out of this game. Your thoughts, Jeff, and then I go to Black.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is, as horrible as this sounds, as unrealistic, it's outside the tackles. But I just hope they call it right and only outside the tackles. And, I mean, 99% of running backs don't run standing up. I don't know if you remember a guy, he played for the Titans, and he played for Houston, Chris Brown. That guy looked like a giraffe. You know,
right.
I never saw, you know what I'm talking about? I never seen an NFL running back run the football practically standing up, because most guys, you know, football's about leverage. Low man wins.
Right.
And one of the examples that they show over and over is Trent Richardson sticking his helmet in a guy's shoulder pads. That's obviously a flag. I think, and also this is a harsh flag, too, 15. Now,
right.
Now, Richardson should not have done that. You know, this is not just the normal guy trying to get low. And I'll tell you, I think Richardson has a good future in the NFL. He's going to have to get bigger shoulder pads, because I can't remember the last time I saw such a large running back with such a small set of pads.
Right.
You know, so hopefully, if they call it like it's written, it shouldn't make a big difference, because the important detail is outside the tackle. Because also, this would be a hard one to call for running plays inside the tackles. I mean, how the ref's going to see it? And it's so fast, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's more scrutiny of the refs on these type of calls. I don't see how you can run with your head up. That's unnatural. It's an unnatural motion to try to lower your shoulders and keep your head up at the same time. I don't see what they're trying to accomplish here with the injuries. I mean, it's too late to make up for those guys. All that money that you got stashed away, go ahead and pay those guys to play the game and got hurt the way you wanted them to play. Go ahead and pay those guys off now. This is no way to make up for it. This is like a pressure move here by the NFL.
I don't know if you guys heard Matt Forte's Twitter tweet, but this is pretty good, and I think a lot of guys are probably going to be doing this too. This is his quote from his Twitter account. Wow, so they really passed that rule. Last time I checked, football was a contact sport. Calling bank now to set up my lowering the boom. Guess I'll have to get my fine money ready. Hashtag lowering the boom fund. Next year, there'll probably be a no jumping over defenders rule. Hashtag lowering the boom fund. So he may be joking about it, but he's probably going to set some money aside for his lowering the boom fund, which means he's going to do what he's normally doing. And if that has to do with him lowering his head and his crown of the head leading, he's going to be doing that. I've seen so many running backs, whether they're in between the tackle box or not.
How is Adrian Peterson supposed to run that?
Right. I totally agree with you. Totally agree. Just like Jeff says, low man wins. You got to get low in order to be able to drive through tackles. And that has to do with your head. Unfortunately, your head's going to be the first thing that's going to be hitting to a lot of defenders. It's just physics. You can't get away from it.
Excuse me. And you know, with these type of rules, it's like they're so worried about concussions, they want guys to open themselves up to all kinds of other injuries. You know,
right?
Because
mm-hmm.
if you run around, you know, standing straight up, you're going to get popped in your internal organs. And, you know, shots to the ribs are real painful. I haven't played football since I was in college. My ribs still hurt from that. I'm not kidding. I tell you, I can barely sleep for a week. That was the last time I played tackle football. Best left to young men. You know, because, of course, played like when we were, you know, like when we were kids, no pads or nothing, you know. You know, well, of course, you know, this is NFL. These are, you know, big guys, and they're fast. They got to wear their pads and whatnot. But it's, you know, yeah, okay, finally, a couple decades late, they worry about concussions, and now they're doing too much too soon, you know. But hopefully the refs can call this one accurately, and it's just one more thing that puts the game in the ref's hands, you know.
Yeah, but this is going to be a judgment call. That's just another judgment call that the refs have to make at a split second, and supposedly judge the intent on the ball carrier. I mean, you know, they have a hard time with pass interference calls. To figure out the intent, if he meant to put a crown of his head into somebody, or it was an accidental contact. How are you going to be able to judge that? You can't. There's no review on that. That's a judgment call, so there's no review on that. I don't know. I mean, it's just disgusting to me. I just want to talk about one other thing, real quick. Mr. LeBron and the Miami Heat are on a historical run right now, and I thought they had a strong chance of losing it in Boston, and they came away with an easier win in Boston than they did last night when LeBron went home in Cleveland and were down in the third quarter by 27 points, and they came back and won that game. I don't know what's more impressive, the win in Boston or quite naturally the win that they had last night in Cleveland. Talk to me, Black.
Don't worry. Mark it in your calendars. April 10th, the Miami Heat versus the Washington Wizards. We'll put an end to all streaks.
Okay. How many games between now and then will they have?
I think right there at the record, 33 is it? I think there'll be one game over that.
Record is 33, yes.
Yes, they'll be at 34 when they face the Wizards, and we'll put an end to that.
Okay. What about you, Jeff?
Tell you, I heard things about Miami, they're playing great, but they get a lot of help at the line, too. it's still very impressive, and I think they could tie the record this season, but they can't break it because then the regular season will be over. I mean, 33 games, that's almost half the season. And the record, which looked almost unbreakable, was by one of the first of the quote super teams or dream teams, whatever you want to call them, the Lakers with Wilt and Jerry West and Elgin Baylor,
Mm-hmm.
Historic.
Okay. Well, it's come to that time again to close out the show. I want to thank you guys for participating tonight. I appreciate you showing up and giving me your vast knowledge of the things we were talking about. I'm going to give you the opportunity to say your final piece before we get out of here. Give it to Jeff first and then Black, and I'll close it out.
It's been fun, and everybody enjoy your brackets or whatever you might be doing.
Yes, Master, please don't get too excited about Frederick Douglass. Tone it down. Picture LeBron James pushing his hands down. That's what I want you to do right now. Just tone it down. It's just an old guy playing for the Houston Texans. But come on, everybody, enjoy this beautiful weekend of March Madness. Like I said, it's Christmas in March. Enjoy these games. Not a lot of upsets yet, but they're coming. Trust me, they're coming.
With that being said, I want to thank you guys for spending the last hour or so with us, I'll see you next week. For those who listen to the other programs, tune in next week. Tune in Friday. Tomorrow, which is the No Chaser Show, 7 p.m., I'll be there all by my lonesome self because Mac is enjoying himself in Sin City, out in Vegas. Hopefully, he'll be able to talk to Mr. Mayweather and have a interview with him. Hopefully, coming back. Saturday will be the FSP show. I'll be hosting that until the late part of April, so that's 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and quite naturally. My show on Sunday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, will be the master plan. With all that being said, like I said, I would thank you for listening. We can also listen to the show. If you missed any part of the show, you can check it out in the archives, along with any other show that we've had in the past. You guys, enjoy the weekend. Be safe, stay healthy, and enjoy the games. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Mr. Anchor, Fantasy Sports and Politics crew, yeah, check. Fantasy Sports and Politics, ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew.